Hi, I'm Amy Goodman, host of Democracy Now! For more than 15 years, CJSF 90.1 FM has been bringing Democracy Now! To the greater Vancouver area every weekday at 11 a.m. From New York, this is Democracy Now!
President Biden, I call on you with all your official and humane qualities to stop this humanitarian catastrophe, this genocide against our innocent people. History will not absolve anyone of these crimes. I call on you to provide relief to our besieged people in Gaza. The war must stop immediately.
As Palestinian leader Mahmoud Abbas calls on the U.S. to help end Israel's 45-day bombardment, the situation in Gaza grows more desperate as Israel attacks the Indonesian hospital and the Jabalia refugee camp, while the Palestinian death toll tops 13,000. We'll speak to an official at UNRWA. Over the weekend, Israeli strikes hit at least two UN schools where thousands of displaced Palestinians had sought refuge.
We were really, really outraged to see that once again, an UNRWA school that is sheltering displaced people in Gaza got hit. And people died in our schools. Schools are protected places. Schools are places where people go looking for safety.
Plus, we remember the Israeli-Canadian peace activist Vivian Silver, who was killed in the October 7th Hamas attack. She was declared dead last week after her remains were identified. She'd spent decades working for peace.
We're no longer willing to do this. We must reach a political agreement. We must change the paradigm that we have been taught for seven decades now, where we've been told that only war will bring peace. We don't believe that anymore. It's been proven that it's not true.
We'll speak with her Palestinian colleague. All that and more coming up. Welcome to Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. Israeli tanks have surrounded Gaza's Indonesian hospital as Israel's military continues its relentless assault on the Gaza Strip's health infrastructure. Earlier today, Israeli artillery fire killed at least 12 people inside the medical complex, where about 700 others, including medical staff and injured people, remain besieged. Egyptian television showed ambulances carrying sick and premature babies passing through the Rafah border, crossing to Egypt, after the UN assisted in moving 31 premature babies from Gaza's Al-Shifa hospital to Rafah on Sunday. UNICEF warned the babies' conditions were incredibly fragile after the multiple moves in extremely dangerous conditions. Other babies died as medical services collapsed at Al-Shifa. Doctors say babies had to drink formula prepared with contaminated water, further endangering their survival. A number have infections. A World Health Organization team visited the Al-Shifa hospital, which it called a death zone, and lauded the heroic healthcare workers sacrificing everything to treat patients.
As healthcare professionals, I am absolutely humbled by the work of you and your teams, the heroic efforts that you've made. I mean, I have no words.
Israel's claimed it uncovered a Hamas tunnel at the Al-Shifa hospital. The claim was rejected by Hamas and medical workers and has not been verified by independent parties. Israel also said hostages are being held at Al-Shifa. Hamas has previously said it took several hostages to hospitals for treatment. On Saturday, an Israeli airstrike killed at least 50 Palestinian civilians at the UN-run Al-Fahura school in the Jabalia refugee camp, though some estimates put the number as high as 200. A separate attack on the Tal al-Zahar school also resulted in civilian casualties. Other parts of Jabalia were also hit, including a large residential complex. This is a Gaza ambulance worker.
We are trying to focus on pulling out survivors. As you can see, we are working with our own two hands. There is no equipment. The only excavator is in northern Gaza, and it stopped working. The bulldozer stopped working. A large number of civil service and ambulance cars stopped working because of fuel running out.
Israel has killed at least 13,000 Palestinians and injured another 30,000 since the start of its assault. The death toll includes at least 5,500 children, or one out of every 200 children in Gaza. Another 1,800 children are missing under the rubble, most of them presumed dead. Over the weekend, reports emerged that talks between Israel, the U.S., and Qatari mediators for Hamas were closing in on a deal to release dozens of women and children hostages and pause fighting for 5 days. In Israel, thousands completed a march from Tel Aviv to Jerusalem Saturday, where they demanded the government do more to release their loved ones who were taken hostage by Hamas on October 7th.
They have to talk to the families. It's impossible that there are 240 kidnapped people and the government, our government, isn't talking to them, isn't telling them what's going on, what's on the table.
Yemen's Houthi rebels say they seized a Japanese cargo ship in the Red Sea. The vessel, named Galaxy Leader, is reportedly partially owned by an Israeli businessman. Around 25 people are believed to be on board the India-bound ship, though Israel said none of their citizens are among the crew. A Houthi spokesperson warned the international community regional security is at stake unless it helps put an end to the war on Gaza.
The Yemeni armed forces confirmed the continuation of carrying out military operations against the Israeli enemy. Until the aggression on the Gaza Strip stops and the ongoing heinous crimes against our Palestinian brothers in Gaza and the West Bank cease.
In the occupied West Bank, Israeli forces killed at least two Palestinians during multiple raids on Sunday. Israeli military and settler attacks have killed some 206 Palestinians in the West Bank since October 7th. Meanwhile, Palestinians living in the West Bank's heavily fortified and monitored H2 district in Hebron have been under one of its longest and strictest lockdowns ever since the start of the conflict. Some 39,000 Palestinians and around 900 extremist Israeli settlers live in H2. Palestinians have largely been barred from leaving their homes except during very brief windows, with Israeli soldiers forcing them back inside at gunpoint. President Biden warned violence against Palestinians in the West Bank could result in a visa ban against Israeli perpetrators. In a Washington Post op-ed published Saturday, Biden also continued to reject a ceasefire in Gaza and called for a two-state solution. In New Haven, Connecticut, hundreds of students and alumni from Yale and Harvard brought a football game between the two universities to a halt for nearly 2 hours Saturday night as they called for a ceasefire in Gaza. Protesters waved Palestinian flags and banners that read, "End the occupation, end the genocide, and free Palestine." They also demanded Yale and Harvard divest from weapons manufacturers that supply Israel's military. Meanwhile, Palestinian rights advocates shut down a convention organized by the California Democratic Party in Sacramento Saturday. Several protesters held a sit-in while others marched through the convention hall chanting, "Ceasefire now." Demonstrators also disrupted speeches by U.S. Senate candidates, Congressmembers Katie Porter, Adam Schiff, and Barbara Lee. Outside the convention, protesters placed 500 pairs of children's shoes to represent the over 5,000 Palestinian children killed in Gaza. The American Public Health Association's Governing Council is calling on President Biden and Congress to press for a ceasefire in Gaza. A resolution approved last week by 90% of members also calls for the, quote, de-escalation of the current conflict by securing the immediate release of the hostages and those detained, the restoration of water, fuel, electricity, and other basic services, and the passage of adequate humanitarian aid to the Gaza Strip. Strip, unquote. Recently, delegates to the American Medical Association voted against debating a similar resolution calling for a ceasefire in order to protect civilian lives and healthcare personnel. The group Healthcare Workers for Palestine said in response, the AMA has a responsibility to uphold the well-being of healthcare workers and minimize human suffering, and it's clear that these values are not being upheld by some of the most influential physicians in the country, they said. In Argentina, far-right libertarian Javier Milei has been elected president. Official results Sunday showed Milei, who's been compared to Donald Trump with 56% of votes, defeating the centrist Peronist candidate Sergio Massa, who conceded defeat. Milei is a climate crisis denier who's proposed banning abortion, easing restrictions on guns, and vowed to shut down Argentina's central bank, replacing the nation's currency with the U.S. dollar. Milei has also questioned the tally of murders committed by the Argentine military dictatorship during Argentina's dirty war from 1976 to 1983. He spoke from Buenos Aires Sunday night.
La situación de Argentina es crítica.
Argentina's situation is critical. The changes our country needs are drastic. There's no room for gradualism. There's no room for tepidity. There's no room for half measures.
In Liberia, the incumbent president, George Weah, conceded a tight race to Joseph Boakye Friday. Voters say Weah was not able to fulfill his promises of reducing poverty, increasing employment, and stemming corruption. Boakye, a former vice president under President Ellen Johnson Sirleaf, had lost to Weah in 2017's presidential election. In a post-election interview, Boakye vowed to redistribute wealth from the exploitation of Liberian resources to its citizens.
The mining sector is going to be within our very, very watch. We're going to know what is happening with our resources, what are the people getting for them, and what do we see after they are no longer there.
Republican Texas Governor Greg Abbott is expected to sign into law a bill approved by lawmakers last week allowing local law enforcement to arrest immigrants and asylum seekers and charge them with a new state crime for crossing the U.S.-Mexico border. The bill would also give Texas judges the authority to issue removal orders to Mexico. Meanwhile, other legislation passed by the Republican-majority Texas House last week would appropriate $1.5 billion to build a border wall. The ACLU has condemned the measures, calling it, quote, some of the most radical anti-immigrant bills ever passed by any state. In British immigration news, the UK Supreme Court ruled the government's plan to send asylum seekers to Rwanda was unlawful. The proposal was first announced last April and met with swift legal challenges and condemnation from rights groups. Prime Minister Rishi Sunak said he would instead seek a formal treaty with Rwanda and introduce emergency legislation in hopes of pushing through the plan. In climate news, global average surface temperatures Friday averaged more than 2 degrees Celsius, or 3.6 degrees Fahrenheit, above pre-industrial levels. It's the first time on record that Earth's daily average temperature has exceeded the 2-degree benchmark. The 2015 Paris Climate Agreement set just 1.5 degrees as the maximum allowable global temperature rise. In the Horn of Africa, at least 130 people have been killed after unrelenting heavy rains triggered once-in-a-century flooding in Ethiopia, Kenya, and Somalia. More than 750,000 people have been displaced, with the death toll expected to rise. The flooding follows the region's worst drought in 40 years, which pushed millions of people into extreme hunger. Bolivia's environment ministry reports a severe drought combined with slash-and-burn farming practices have driven an unprecedented number of wildfires. The fires have scorched nature reserves and indigenous communities in Bolivia's Amazon and into neighboring Brazil, killing wildlife and triggering air quality alerts that have forced thousands of schools to cancel classes. On Friday, environmentalists rallied in the Bolivian capital of La Paz to demand government action.
Millions of animals are dying. Our Mother Earth is dying. Our vegetation, fauna, and flora are disappearing. There are thousands of animals. The firemen who are there still cannot put out the fire. We want a national emergency to be declared because we want our land to be safe.
Back in the United States, a Colorado judge has ruled that Donald Trump engaged in an insurrection, but that it does not bar him from appearing on the presidential ballot next year. The judge ruled the 14th Amendment's ban on insurrectionists holding office does not apply to presidents. Friday's ruling comes after courts in Michigan and Minnesota also shot down attempts to keep Trump off those states' primary ballots. In related news, the new House Speaker, Mike Johnson, announced he'll release 44,000 hours of footage from the January 6th Capitol insurrection to the public. With the move, Johnson fulfills a pledge he made to the far-right members of his party, whom he circumvented last week in order to pass a stopgap government funding bill. Extremist conspiracy theories alleging federal agents participated in the attack have already started recirculating since the first 90 hours of footage were released Friday. Democrats and other critics are warning the videos, which show in detail how rioters entered the Capitol complex and how lawmakers escaped, could endanger the safety of staff and Congress members. And Rosalynn Carter, wife of former President Jimmy Carter, has died at the age of 96. Carter served as a longtime political advisor and strategist as Jimmy Carter went from a rural state senator to Georgia governor in 1970 and president of the United States in 1976. As First Lady, Rosalynn Carter joined White House cabinet meetings and served as an envoy to Latin America. Time magazine in 1979 declared her to be the second most powerful person in the United States. After leaving the White House, she campaigned to expand U.S. mental health services. She and Jimmy Carter also worked with the charity Habitat for Humanity. Jimmy Carter, who turned 99 in October, entered home hospice care in February. They had both just celebrated their 77th anniversary. And those are some of the headlines. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. Coming up, we get the latest from Gaza, where the Palestinian death toll has topped 13,000. Stay with us. لأجلك يا مدينة الصلاة أصلي لأجلك يا بهية المساجد يا زهرة المدائن يا الصلاة أصلي عيوننا إليك ترحل كل يوم ترحل كل يوم تدور في أربعة Flower of Cities by Nay Barghouti. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. Health officials in Gaza say the overall death toll from Israel's 45-day bombardment has topped 13,000. More than 1.7 million Palestinians have been displaced, with many fearing they'll never be allowed to return home. In Gaza City, Israeli tanks have surrounded the Indonesian hospital. Palestinian officials say at least 12 people have already been killed in Israeli strikes on the hospital. The government of Indonesia has condemned Israel's targeting of the hospital, saying it's a clear violation of international humanitarian laws. Meanwhile, 31 premature babies were evacuated from Al-Shifa, the largest hospital in Gaza City, which has been seized by the Israeli military. The babies, who are suffering from dehydration, hypothermia, and sepsis, have been taken to Rafah. Some have already been moved across the border. On Saturday, an Israeli airstrike killed at least 50 Palestinian civilians at a UN-run school in the Jabalia refugee camp, though some estimates put the number as high as 200. A second UNRWA school was also hit Saturday. This comes as the World Food Program is warning residents of Gaza may soon face starvation due to a massive shortage of food. We begin today's show with Tamara Arafai, spokesperson for UNRWA, the United Nations Agency for Palestine Refugees. She's joining us from Jordan. Welcome back to Democracy Now!, Tamara. If you can talk about the situation right now in Gaza, we understand UN workers were allowed in to help transport these premature babies from northern Gaza to southern Gaza. Some have crossed over into Egypt right now. And then you have the bombing of the UNRWA schools. You work for UNRWA in the Jabalia refugee camp.
I do work for UNRWA, and sadly, the bombing of an UNRWA school in Jabalia is the 85th incident against an UNRWA building. We have 67 UNRWA buildings. Many of them are actual shelters that have sustained damage because of strikes nearby or direct hits, killing 176 people who were displaced inside the UN building under the UN flag in search for safety. So nowhere is safe in Gaza. This is, in a nutshell, the situation, especially as you so rightly mentioned, Amy, 1.7 million Gazans of a total population of 2.2 million, that's roughly 77% of the Gazan population, is now displaced outside of their homes, not knowing whether they're going to go back, especially if they have moved from the north of the Gaza Strip to the south, noting that the north has been completely sealed for the last few weeks.
Explain what these schools did before and now what's happening.
UNRWA has a system of education, schooling, where 300,000 girls and boys in Gaza receive quality education, very much focused on human rights, tolerance, conflict resolution. This is before the war. During this war, so for the last now 6 weeks, these schools have turned into shelters. People in Gaza, sadly, are used to wars, and they're used to sheltering in UNRWA schools because this is where they feel that there's sanctity, a global understanding that when someone is in the protection of the UN, then these buildings will not be targeted. Sadly, this is not the case. So not only are 3/4 of the Gaza population now made forcibly displaced, some of them for the second or third time, but also their access to basic food and humanitarian assistance is very, very restricted, given the low level of supplies that have been coming into the Strip, despite an agreement to get trucks in.
And can you talk about the children, well, I should say the infants, who are at Al-Shifa? We have all seen the pictures of them not in incubators, but huddled together, I think wrapped in aluminum to try to maintain their heat. Now UN workers getting in and bringing them south. And now, just as we're broadcasting, apparently some are being taken over the border into Egypt. What did that whole journey involve? How did the UN workers also get in?
So I think this picture of these premature infants will remain as one of the most compelling ones of this conflict. And I think it'll come back to remind us that Gazans really hold on to life. It took a very, very complex and elaborate UN operation to be able to go to Al-Shifa Hospital and remove these premature babies. The mission was led by the World Health Organization's colleagues, actual heroes, with support from several UN organizations, including UNRWA. But these kids, I'm afraid, these babies might be joining their peers in Gaza, who before the war, we had already identified that most children in Gaza suffer from post-traumatic stress disorder because of having grown up within a choking blockade on the Strip, where they cannot leave the Strip, and because of having survived so many conflicts at such a young age. I really, really hope that these kids' parents are alive and that they will be taken care of. But that's something to remember about the long-term impact on the psychology of children of all these wars.
I wanted to play for you a clip. This is Mark Regev, senior advisor to the Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu. He recently spoke on MSNBC, where he was interviewed by Mehdi Hassan.
I have seen lots of children with my own lying eyes being pulled from the rubble.
Because they're the pictures Hamas wants you to see. Exactly my point,
Mehdi.
They're the pictures Hamas wants.
There are also people that your government has killed. You accept that, right? You've killed children, or do you deny
that? No, I do not. I do not. I do not. First of all, you don't know how those people died, those children.
Oh, wow.
That was Mehdi Hassan saying, oh, wow. And Mark Regev said he did not accept that children have died in Gaza. Tamara Arafat, your response.
There's enough footage and there is enough documenting from credible sources, including the UN, of children dying. Save the Children already a few weeks ago said that at least 4,000 children died. It is a reality. Every war in Gaza sees scores of children dead, and those who do not die, most of them have long-term impact on their psychological and mental well-being.
I'm wondering if you can talk about UNRWA, your agency that serves Palestinians, warning that you'll have to stop life-saving operations in Gaza unless you receive more fuel.
A couple of days ago, there was an agreement on letting fuel into the Strip after many weeks since the beginning of the war of not allowing fuel in. The Israeli authorities had not allowed fuel in. I want to say a word about the centrality of fuel to humanitarian operations. Trucks that bring the aid from the Rafah crossing, electricity generators that provide electricity to water pumping and water desalination so that people can have access to clean drinking water. Life-saving machines at hospitals, bakeries that run, everything needs fuel. The agreement of 2 days ago is an agreement to bring in 120,000 liters of fuel to cover 2 days. We require that same amount every single day. So effectively, we're getting half of what we need for our humanitarian operations, for the bakeries, the hospitals, the trucks, and the clean water, which then will force us to have to take very difficult decisions as to what do we diminish? Do we diminish access to clean drinking water at the risk of skin and gastro diseases, especially in overcrowded shelters? Do we diminish the bread and the bakeries, especially to people? I just heard you say that World Food Program is warning of famine. What do we diminish? Do we diminish bringing the trucks in from the Rafah border? If we do not get the exact amount we need for a minimal humanitarian response, then we're going to have to function halfway and only provide half of what these people need.
If the IDF knows the coordinates of UNRWA locations, among them schools, can you explain how at least 40 UNRWA buildings have been hit?
67 buildings now that we're speaking. I cannot explain militarily how decisions are taken, but I can reiterate that UNRWA provides very regularly, every 2 weeks, the GPS locations of all its installations to both parties. So to the Israeli authorities, but also to the de facto Hamas authorities, so that no one can say we did not know. Every one of our schools and installations and warehouses are very clearly marked, and that marking is communicated.
What is the UNRWA mandate, Tamara?
The UNRWA mandate is to provide basic services, schools, health services, social protection to Palestine refugees until there's a political solution whereby 5.9 people who are the descendants of the original Palestine refugees who were expelled or fled in 1948, there's a solution.